This is, officially speaking, the Football Zebras podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Ostro, and the 2016 season is upon us finally. And if this is our inaugural podcast, there can be no better way, I think, though, to kick it off with a guest that we have today. And he really needs no introduction, but we're going to do it anyway. He's the former vice president of officiating for the National Football League. He spent 14 years with the NFL, and he's currently the rules analyst for Fox Sports for both the NFL and the college games. He was named Sports Illustrated Sports Media Person of the Year in 2010, and his new book is After Further Review, My Life, Including the Infamous, Controversial, and Unforgettable Calls That Changed the NFL. And it is my extreme pleasure to welcome Mike Pereira to Officially Speaking. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ben, and this is it's great being in this forum speaking to this group. Obviously, we are all involved in officiating, and that's part of this site, so it's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, John Madden took the perfect title from us when he named his book, Hey, I Wrote a Book, but after further review, I got this, and, you know, they always say a book that's difficult to put down, and well, that was certainly the case with this book. Interesting stories, good storytelling, and I really enjoyed it, and I think that our audience would enjoy it as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It was fun to write. Most of the time, it was fun to write. I mean, there are other times, you know, when you write about yourself, it's kind of like some of the people on social media, you know, you're by yourself and it seems safe. You can say anything you want. And then when you read it publicly, you go, oh my God, did I say that about myself? And I've got nicknames now that my buddies are calling me that I'm not so sure I'm happy about, but that's the way it is.
The one person that keeps coming up in the book, Al Pereira, your father, he officiated in the Pacific Coast Athletic Association for 34 years. You said he was a catalyst for you to join officiating, and many officials seem to have that mentor, that family member or a close friend who's in officiating. And some of the good ones, you know, the common thread is that they came from a strong mentoring background. How important was your father's role in becoming an official?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point. My father was involved in officiating, and I hardly played the game myself, but I learned it. You know, I learned it through going to his games, and sometimes I would be in the stands, and sometimes I would be in the sidelines, and he was a head linesman, so, you know, I'd hang around the chain. Sometimes I'd, you know, work on the chain gang, and I got a feel for the game through the eyes of an official, which is a complete different feel than through the eyes of a player or through the eyes of a coach. And so I do think it did my interest in officiating. I mean, to be perfectly candid, it was money that created the interest that, when I was still in college, a gentleman named Tommy Eichista came to me and said, I think I went to see my dad work a game at San Jose State, and Tommy Eichista was the timer, and said, why aren't you officiating? And I remember saying something about, geez, I'm still in college, for God's sakes. He said, well, you can make $30 a week and work in Pop Warner football now. And I said, well, then let me in. I'm ready to roll. And I bought a uniform and went to work these games, these Pop Warner games in East Palo Alto. And it was interesting because what I found is like what my dad had. It was a passion for the game through officiating. That unique feeling that you got when you stepped on the field, that you were actually charged with adjudicating rules and making games being played fairly between two teams of kids with parents yelling at you on the sidelines. It was an incredible feeling. And so I I learned quickly what my dad had gone through as he moved up the ladder to college and officiating, and that was my start. And he was a, you know, he had a huge role in my life, but he, you know, other than the challenge that, excuse me, that he put on me in that baseball game in Lodi where he told me I wasn't worth a quarter it takes to buy a Coke, he never interfered. I mean, he let me learn the game or learn officiating through the eyes, really, of others, through a guy named Jack Gatto that I reference in the book. And, I mean, he was always there for me if I needed something or had a question. But, you know, by the time I started working, I'd already moved out of the house. I was in college, so we didn't have the direct contact that we once had. But certainly without that officiating influence that I grew up with watching him work, I doubt I probably would have been involved in this at all.
And take me through, you said you started with Pop Warner, and I saw a little bit of a parallel. When I started the website, I was going in pretty headstrong. I was like, you know, I know my rule book. I know my rules. I've got this. And you said you got onto the field and you said you studied a little bit. You got yourself up to date, but tell me what, even though it was kids, you know, it was pretty intense from the very beginning.
Yeah, it was. And you know, there's no question that when any official goes on the field for the first time at any level, whatever he starts at, whether it's freshman high school football or Pop Warner football, whatever, they don't know the rules. I mean, they don't know enough of the rules. I mean, they've been taught more mechanics than anything, but, you know, rules knowledge is something that takes years to capture. I mean, not one season. I mean, the rules are, you know, football rules are complicated. There is no question about it. And it takes a long time to really master the rules. And I say master the rules, which should be the goal of anybody that officiates, to master the rules. But it's almost like an art form to me, rules. You have to actually enjoy it. I mean, it can't be something that, you know, that is a drag for you to try to learn the rules. It has to be something when you pick up the rule book and you read about it, it becomes enjoyable. It becomes kind of a personal challenge. And, you know, and for me, you know, I certainly in my Pop Warner days, I wasn't even near ready when it comes to rules wise, and neither was the following year, a couple of years when I got into high school football. I knew the basics, but I didn't know the intricacies, and I also didn't know the art form, you know, to me, because it's one thing to know the rules, but it's another thing to apply them in an art form. So by art, I mean knowing the rule, but more importantly, knowing when to apply that rule and the times when you don't have to apply the rule. That's getting away from the science of rules and into the art. But to me, the real rules people, I mean, and there aren't a ton of them, but the people that have mastered it, I mean, will probably tell you that, you know what, I mastered it because I enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't have a murder mystery on my nightstand next to the bed. I had a rule book, and I read it. And every time I read it, it's like, boom, I learned something. It went in my memory bank, and eventually I got it mastered.
And football is not your only sport. I mean, from there, I mean, I don't know if you're Hall of Fame material up in Alaska, but you played some semi-pro ball up there. I was fascinated to read about this side of you.
I was a baseball player. I went to the University of Santa Clara and had a very small portion of a scholarship. Half of that small portion was for basketball and the other half was for baseball. Well, my freshman year on the freshman basketball team at Santa Clara, there were 15 players on the roster and I was player number 15. And so I knew I had no future in that sport. So I concentrated on baseball and we had a great baseball program at Santa Clara, and we had a lot of guys go out for summer baseball. And after my after my sophomore year, I got picked up by the Anchorage Glacier Pilots in Anchorage, Alaska. So after my sophomore year, here I go up to Alaska to spend the summer and play baseball up there. And really, it's pretty amazing because that's where I matured as a baseball player. I really was a little skinny little runt in my first year at college and a 220 hitter playing first base in my freshman year. And then they moved me to center field, you know, halfway through that freshman season. But it was really after my sophomore year that I matured and got some strength and played a number of years in Alaska. And I emphasize a number of years because I am in the Hall of Fame up there. And it's likely because I still have all-time records, you know, dating back to 1973, 74, 75, and they're still playing summer baseball up there. And I tell everybody, yeah, I'm a Hall of Famer. Go look at the record book. And you can look at the record book. Most hits, Pereira. Most walks, Pereira. Most runs, Pereira. I tell everybody, look at those. Just do me a favor and don't look at most games played. Because if you look at most games played, it's like, there's Pereira, 200 and some odd games. And the next closest guy is 80. Because the guys that were up there were so good. They'd play 1 year and then sign a professional contract. I was a good player, but I wasn't that good to be a pro material. But I kept going back there every summer, which is why I have all of these quote unquote all time records.
Yeah, and now we can we have a shared path there, I guess, with Tim Tebow. So that works out.
Yeah, right. You'll probably end up to be a better player than I ever played. I saw some of those rockets he launched in batting practice, but wait till they throw him the curveball. Then maybe he'll go to umpiring instead. Yeah.
So one of the things that that struck me throughout, I mean, you are a survivor, and you really take us through an intimate and emotional journey of your diagnosis with testicular cancer, and at the age of 25, no less. Then within the last 10 years, you've had a few surgeries to remove precancerous growths in your colon. And the one thing that keeps coming back is through these life-altering events, you have this vast support network behind you. I mean, officiating is not the 3 hours on the field. I mean, these are bonds that, you know, when there's ups, you celebrate them. When there's downs, you pick each other up. Tell us a little bit about what that means and how that got you through some of these difficult moments.
You know, Ben, it's interesting because going through my first bout with a testicular cancer, I was officiating, but, you know, I had just basically gotten into it for a couple of years because as I started doing Pop Warner and then my freshman football, I moved to Alaska and I did a little bit up there, but not a lot of officiating. So when I came back in 75 and had this run in with testicular cancer, my support group was very limited, which is why I think if you read the book, you know, you're going to kind of get the feeling, and I said it, that I basically dropped out of society. I mean, because I had family and family was basically the only support group I had. And, you know, I think I probably had the typical attitude that people have when you go through a period where you know you have cancer and, you know, as you're, you know, take your treatments, which in my case was radiation, you go through this whole period of time of, you know, am I going to make it? You know, am I going to live? Am I going to die? So when you stare down that path, you think about, well, I don't care what I do professionally. I'm going to enjoy every single day that I'm upright. And, don't talk to me about, you know, working in some professional organization, whether it be the finance or service industries, I'm not going to do it. And I dropped out. I mean, and I, you know, I did some funky things, like, you know, working for a boxing promoter. So it was a very tough time for me. Now, the second time it came around with my colon, you know, in New York, where they removed about a foot of my colon. Now I had a family. I mean, I had a second family, and that second family was much bigger than my first family. That was my officiating family, because by the time I got to that level, what happens is you devote so much of your time to officiating that your best friends end up to be officials, people that you work with. Might be people on your crew, people in your association, but they're your circle of friends who have shared things that really no other group does, the frustrations of officiating and what goes along with that. And official to official, you understand that, you get close because you talk about it, and that was my family. That became my family, as it has become the family, that officiating circle has become the family of many others who have had hardships. And you know, when I had the colon thing in New York, I mean, at that point, you know, I was head of officiating, and my guys rallied around me. I got cards every day, fruit baskets, it was just incredible, the outpouring of support that you got from those that truly cared about it. And that's what kept me going. I mean, there's no question that that's what kept me going. And even through, you know, the first bout, even though it wasn't the family, it was the passion that I had for officiating that got me through that. But the second time, you know, it was, and even to this day, you know, I mean, when I have my struggles, who are the people that call? They're officiating guys. They're officiating buddies. And so, you know, when I speak to officiating groups, you know, I talk about this, and it's really amazing to me that, you know, those that move up the ladder in officiating, how officiating has become a passion, and then how it's incredible how you become a member of the team and we all look out for each other. And it's a very special thing.
And one of the things that, you know, in addition to some of these battles, we also see you are the product of chance, I guess, is the best way to put it. You're offered a supervisor of officials in the Western Athletic Conference, the WAC. You turned it down. Second chance around, then they hire you. You were offered a position to succeed Jerry Seaman as the head of officiating. And you say, you know what, I might not be in the right place at the right time. They gave you a year and said, you know what, will you take it in a year and another second chance? And then I didn't even know that there were two times when you said you were pretty much on your way out the door at the NFL and ready to head back to college. One time you were looking to join the SEC. The ink was ready for you. The pen was ready for your contract there in the SEC. And it just seems like all of these things that line up at just one point, something goes off in a different way. And that just totally alters. And then you're not Mike Pereira, the Fox rules analyst anymore. It's all of these elements in the chain. Have you thought about how all of these things have come together? And you know, if just one thing had gone a different way, how much different it would have been?
Well, think about it this way. I mean, you know, really, if you go back to 1996, it was very early in January, I believe it was, might have even been late December, I don't know, but my college season was over. I had, you know, worked I'm not sure if it was the Cotton Bowl or whatever, and the season was over. I had applied to the NFL, hadn't heard anything. Assumed at age 46 that any future that I had with the NFL was not going to happen, you know, because I thought I was, you know, too old. Some of my buddies had been in, had gotten in, but that were like the same age as me, but I didn't, you know. So at that point, that's when the Western Athletic Conference called me and said, you know, the Carl Benson, who was their commissioner, and said, how about getting off the field and becoming the supervisor of the WAC? And, boy, that was a hard decision. And I was in Hawaii with Tony Carreni, and we discussed the positives and the negatives. And it was at that point in Hawaii when I decided I was going to take Commissioner Benson's offer and retire from the field and go into the administrative side running that program. And so I called them and told them that I would accept the position as the supervisor, and I'd worked a bunch of bowl games. So I really felt like I had done whatever I was going to do in college, even though at age 46, I put it all behind me and said, okay, it's time to tackle the administrative side. The interesting part of that then came as it was no more than, you know, 5 or 6 days later that the league called, the NFL called and said that I was a finalist, told me that I was one of the finalists. And when you become a finalist, unless they find some deep, dark secret in your background, you're likely to get in at some point. So now, Mr. Flip-Flop, that would be me. Now I had to call back the Western Athletic Conference and say, I can't retire from the field because my dream was to get in the NFL. So I'm going to, as a finalist, I'm going to have to keep working. So I have to turn down your offer. And Commissioner Benson kind of thought about it. And then, you know, over a couple discussions after that, you know, said, you know, could you possibly do both? It led to my getting into the NFL and in that first year in 1996, and then becoming the supervisor of officials for the WAC, which that 2 years of being in the WAC as the supervisor probably is what led to my being hired by the office, the NFL office in New York. But point being, 1996 at age 46, I mean, I always say that, you know, at age 46, before this came around, I didn't have a pot to piss in. You've heard the expression. I was still kind of living the, you know, the day at a time thing and not very successful in anything I did. And then this happened at 46. It's like the moons lined up and these opportunities just flooded me, and really amazingly, I made the right choice. I made the choices that I needed to make, and then, you know, here I am in 2016, 20 years later, and it's where it's led me. So there is a time in your life, I do believe, that there's a window that opens that gives you the opportunity to pursue something that you really want to do. You have to be kind of ready for it. You have to be willing to, you know, to sacrifice it in some respects to get there. But, you know, with me, it was, you know, 1996 at 46 years old. And I said, you know, the next time my moons line up, I'm going to be ready, maybe even a little more ready, but I'll be 92 when they line up the next time. So I don't think I'll have much option to do much.
And it was even the venerable Jerry Markbright, the referee, who even said to you, you know what? You are great referee material. You know, he thought you had a career as a white hat. And he says, no, you should stay on the field. But fortunate for us, here you are and explaining the rules to us every Sunday. I want to move because I know your time is short, and I wanted to get to this where you are now. And before you were head of officials, very rarely, maybe I have enough fingers to count how many times the league would acknowledge an error publicly. Then a few years after you become vice president of officiating, or at that point it was the director of officiating, the league starts their network, and, you know, they need to fill some time. And here comes Mike Pereira, and, you know, he's telling us about some of the rule interpretations, and some of it's dirty laundry, and most of it is, of course, you know, this is the call, this is the right call, and this is why. And now from that point, you go to where we have social media, where the window has been narrowed down to the point where you get feedback. I mean, you know, yes, we hear about, yeah, well, you don't know your ass from the end zone, and that's the good stuff that you hear. And, you know, that quick evolution from early 2000s to now, where, you know, social media has really latched on to officiating. I mean, we all could not have seen this coming.
Yeah, I don't even think the league saw it coming. You're right about the NFL Network coming along and having to film some time. And that first year, I did a segment with Rich Eisen, you know, breaking down a couple of plays, of the big plays from the Sunday before. And it lasted 1 year. It got canceled after 1 year. And it was actually Dean Blandino, who at the time came up with the nickname for me. And my nickname became canceled in the office in New York. But the reason it got canceled was some pushback from the clubs, who said, you know, hey, we can't talk about officiating, but you let Pereira go on the air and talk about it on the NFL Network. And so whammo, canceled I became. The next year, then they came back, though, and said, we wanted to do it, and they wanted to do it, and the league said, yes, go ahead and do it. And I think there were a couple of reasons, Ben. You know, one is because the league was finally starting to realize that officiating was not something that you could brush under the carpet. People are too invested in the game right now. They're invested far more than just being a fan of their team. They might have a fantasy team. I mean, and so they're really involved. Hell, they act like owners and general managers when they have their fantasy team. You know, the league always tries to poo-poo the gambling part, but people gamble and they bet on games, and that's what keeps them watching television. So, you know, to just brush something under the carpet really wasn't going to satisfy people's needs, especially, you know, with the technology and the social media developing at that time. And then secondly, I think they trusted me. You know, the league got to the point where they knew I pretty much wouldn't say anything that would reflect badly on the league or reflect badly on the officials. And I did convince them that to really recognize the fact that sometimes you have to say that you missed something. And because if you just go out and defend everything, then you have no credibility. So you have to be able to say, look at, we missed this. I mean, to look back at the opening Thursday night game of this season, we missed the helmet-to-helmet shot, you know, on Cam Newton, you know, by Brandon Marshall. Because it gives you credibility if you have to defend something and say, you know, people can't say, well, you always say you're right. Well, that's not true. It's not true. We do admit that we're wrong. So the more interesting part to me, I think, is, you know, I think we kind of led the charge. The NFL kind of led the charge in talking about officiating and getting me out there, even when I was the head of officiating, talking about some of the mistakes. But we led the charge. But look where it's led now. I mean, look at the NBA, for God's sakes. They're releasing, you know, all the officiating stats in the last 2 minutes on games that are decided by, however, I don't know, X amount of points or less. And so it's become a topic that is out there for people to see and to read. And it's put the officials under more of a microscope. I understand that. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, because we all recognize that there are going to be people that just focus on the mistakes. But I also think that it is really kind of shown people how difficult it is and how right they are sometimes on incredibly tough calls. And so you can look at it with the glass half empty or the glass half full, And I think overall the glass is half full, you know, when it comes to this area.
All right, Mike, we still have so much more to cover. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring you back for another episode. But thank you very much for joining us. Mike Pereira, the Fox Sports rules analyst, and he's the author of After Further Review, My Life, including the infamous, controversial, and unforgettable calls that changed the NFL. I really, really enjoyed this book, and I think you will too. So check it out. Look for it online or at your local bookstore. Mike Pereira, thank you very much. And that does it for our inaugural episode of Officially Speaking, the Football Zebras podcast. I'm Ben Ostro. Thanks for listening.